On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we will be digging deep into the career of James Shields. Just kidding. It's the trade deadline, obviously. So we're going to talk about all of the trades that have already happened, chat about the teams that haven't done jack yet, and speed run the results from the weekend so that you know who's going for it, who's not, and who's confused. Let's do it. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that thinks we should be talking more about the prayers to be named later. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Bless you.
Thank you, man. Yes, while Mariners fans are eagerly wondering who will that third player be that is going to the Rays for Randy Arozarena, guess what? They've already forgotten that that even exists because the Mariners are back, baby. They swept one of the worst teams of all time, and they're back tied for first place. We are going to talk about the Mariners way later on in this show as we speed run the weekend's results. We are recording this on Sunday evening. The Sunday night baseball game is, I believe, almost complete. We are not going to talk about that whatsoever because, boy, do we have a lot of trades to talk about. We knew that when we got off the mic on Friday morning that the weekend was about to be jam-packed, and I'll be honest, we got even more this weekend than I was expecting, so we are going to get into it. We're going to organize it roughly by team, and then in the second half, we're going to talk about the teams that haven't done anything yet, and then we will review some of the results from the weekend.
But before we dive into the specifics, I want to look at the big picture. I have this super nerdy friend named Jordan Schusterman who sent me who sent me a Google sheet, shouts out, no free ads, that has the trades per day every year during the trade deadline dating back to 2007. Basically to look at how busy it is, how much action there is in the days leading up to the deadline, and how many trades total are made. So far, if we start on July 24th, we have had 16 trades. Last year, we had 46. The year before, we had 45. And the year before that, 44. So you would think we'll probably get to at least 40. So that means we have at least 24 more trades that will happen between now and when the bell rings at 6 p.m. on Tuesday. That is wild. However, it is also notable we've had a lot of trades relatively so far. Usually, and if we're thinking of Tuesday as day zero, Monday, day one, days two, three, and four over this weekend, we had 14 different trades. That is a pretty big number.
Yeah. And that's, we're going to try and cover basically all of them that have happened, you know, since we talked on Friday morning. Of course, recapping still, I would say the most significant one, which was the Mariners acquiring Randy. But I mean, there's some real players moving and not just rentals, right? I think that's what's been interesting so far. But we're going to roughly organize this by team. I think that's the simplest way to do it, especially since some of the teams that have been active have made multiple moves. So let's start with the Phillies of Philadelphia. Jake, they lost the series this weekend against Cleveland at home, but they were busy. Dave Dombrowski, what a surprise. Dave Dombrowski, in charge of the front office of the best team in baseball, is making some aggressive moves. So that part is not shocking whatsoever. However, the two trades that they did make are some interesting maneuvers.
They don't call him Dealer Dave because he works at the casino down the street from Citizens Bank Park, Jordan. This is a man who loves action and transacting, okay? Mm-hmm. And Mr. Dombrowski did the ultimate challenge trade, acquiring Austin Hayes from the Baltimore Orioles for Sir Anthony Dominguez, a hard-throwing reliever, and outfielder Christian Pache. Now, just a little bit of background. I was on my way to have lunch with my wonderful fiance and her family when this trade came out. And I was like, yeah, I'm probably going to have to write about this one because it's the Orioles and the Phillies. And so I did that. And here are my thoughts on this trade. Big picture. Two contenders swapping players on their big league rosters is fascinating. I love it because I don't need to understand how good this high A third baseman is to properly evaluate the trade. I have spent a lot of time watching Austin Hayes, Sir Anthony Dominguez, and Christian Pache do the baseball. And so instead of having to just like cram a bunch of numbers from Fangraphs on a prospect, I can like think about this in reality. This is what trades should be. This is what they were back in my day. Okay. No dorky prospect evaluation from Jordan Schusterman on this one. Pretty simple though. Austin Hayes is going to the Phillies because he's going to give them a right-handed bat that can play the outfield. They've had Brandon Marsh playing left and Johan Rojas playing center. What they're going to do with Hayes is have him platoon with Marsh, who has really struggled to hit left-handed pitching. Hayes hits left-handed pitching really well, even better on the road, because when he's at home at Baltimore, they have the enormous wall in left field. And so that's kind of cooled his numbers down since they moved the wall back. And so for the Phillies, it makes a whole lot of sense. And then for the Orioles, it's really a better roster fit, even though Hayes was there for such a long time. Like, Pache is a right-handed hitting guy who can play center field. Hayes really couldn't play center field anymore. They've had Mullins and Colton Cowser playing center, both of whom are left-handed. So they just needed another right-handed outfield bat. I still think they might go get another one and not keep Pache. That's a possibility. But if they don't do that, Pache still fits well with their roster. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for Hayes too, yeah, I think the ballpark fit there is definitely nice. I mean, you mentioned two contenders making a deal with major leaguers. It's not just two contenders. I mean, these have been kind of consensus, the two best teams in the league for the last month, like in each league for the last, you know, month or two or so. And so now it's easy. It's not just like automatic, you know, book your tickets for the Phillies Orioles World Series. You know, it's not
that
simple.
We're all staying at an Airbnb in Aberdeen, right, baby.
Right. We can all hang out at the Ripken Experience Hotel or whatever. But no, I mean, it's not just that, right? I mean, these are the two teams. And so it is interesting that now we're going to get to the other big move that the Orioles make, which I think is even, well, that both of these teams made, right? Because this one is nice and easy to think about for the reasons you explained, but they did ultimately both also deal from some prospect depth here in a second, which we'll talk about. But as for the Phillies, because as it relates to their other move, and this is why it's interesting for both of these teams, there's not that many holes on these rosters, right? And so there's going to be very specific moves. And so as we open it up to the other move that the Phillies made.
Well, just quickly. When it became clear that Whit Merrifield was cooked like a turducken, the number one thing on Dave Dombrowski's to-do list was right-handed hitting outfielder. Everyone knew that. I knew that. You knew that. Everybody I'd ever met in my life knew that. What was interesting is that they went and got a guy from a contending team. I think that was surprising. In my head, I had already penciled Mark Canna on the Phillies roster. And so for it to be Austin Hayes, a player who was coming from the first place Orioles, is super interesting. But let's pivot now to what the Phillies did today, acquiring Carlos Estevez from the Angels for George Klaassen and Samuel Aldeguerri, two minor league pitchers. Let's start with Estevez, please.
Yeah, well, again, because this is related, at least in part, to being willing to deal away from someone who has been a part of your major league bullpen in a very real way over the last couple of years, which is, you know, Sir Anthony Dominguez, who is still under contract for, I believe, at least another year or two, whereas Estevez is a straight rental. Now, Estevez is an interesting closer. He's someone who relies so much on just like this very, very, very good fastball, to where it's just like, here it is and hit it. And generally, guys haven't really been hitting it, but it's also why the strikeout rate isn't necessarily through the roof. But he throws a ton of strikes, or at least he does now. This version of him throws a ton of strikes. It has, you know, left him liable for the occasional, like, brutal home run. But the fastball's just been so good, and he's thrown so many strikes that especially the Phillies bullpen knows this as well as anyone. The stuff has been unquestionable, but the strike throwing hasn't always been there for even their best guys. And so to get Estevez, that's not something you're going to have to worry about.
Right.
And I have to imagine that that's part of what really, you know, had him be extra appealing, and that they paid a real price here for a guy for just a couple of months.
The Phillies clearly believe that you need five good relievers to get through October, right? Strom and Hoffman were all stars. Orion Kerkering has been very good. Jose Alvarado has been shaky this year, but the Phillies definitely believe they can get him right for the postseason. And so then Estevez is the fifth piece that they want. Dominguez had been that piece in the past. He looked out of rhythm a lot of the season, so it doesn't surprise me that they went kind of swap those two guys out. Jordan Schusterman.
Yes.
You now get one sentence on these prospects, please.
One sentence each?
Sure, man.
Samuel Aldeguerri is a left-handed Italian pitcher. Not like, oh, his name sounds Italian. No. Born in Italy, yeah. Italian person. Okay.
Not bada bing, More like, is not Italian American. Like, we're talking. No.
This is a real, and again, we've seen a handful of like actual European prospects kind of pop up in recent years. Right. He is that, and he's had a very good start of his pro career.
He makes his pesto with a mortar and pestle. Like, this is, he's not throwing that in a blender. Okay. Yes.
So Samuel Aldighieri, that is a real prospect. Now, again, younger, but interesting, long way. I mean, he's 22 already, so it's not like he's a teenager, but interesting stuff. Klaassen,
it's going to be tough. Yeah. It's going to be tough for his Nona to be, you know, another 3 hours time difference away.
Time zone wise, that is a tough bounce, I would imagine, for the Aldighieri family. But anyway, yeah, he's not, again, Velo, whatever. Okay, George Klaassen. George Klaassen deserves his own podcast. This dude could not get on the mound at the University of Minnesota because his strike throwing was so bad. And Minnesota's not even good. And that's how reckless his command was. And the Phillies were like, whatever. The dude throws 100 and we know how to teach pitching. So they drafted him. And miraculously, like basically immediately, not only were they like, you can be a starter, you can also now magically throw strikes. He was one of the best pitchers in minor league baseball for the first 2 months. He's kind of tailed off recently. I'm not sure if there's been some injury stuff there, but upside wise, I mean, he has maybe top 10 stuff in the minor leagues. And so that is a huge, you know, developmental ball of clay for the Angels' desolate farm system to work with. What happens next with him, I don't know, but it is certainly an exciting arm at the very, very, very least that, you know, good for the Angels to get for 2 months of Carlos Estevez.
Yeah, it is a nice little haul for them. Good job. Good job, Angels. Let's talk about another big trade that went down, the Baltimore Orioles acquiring Zach Eflin from the Tampa Bay Rays for a trio of prospects, Jackson Bowmeister, Mac Horvath, and Matthew Etzel. If the obviousest trade was Phillies acquire right-handed hitting bench outfielder, Baltimore Orioles acquiring a starter who can suck up some innings might be number two. And Eflin provides just that for the Orioles, who have really, really struggled in the starting rotation over the last month. If you look at the full season numbers, it's really not too bad. But, I mean, trim that thing down to June 1st, and the O's have been very not good.
Yeah, and I would just say that, like, he, by the way, also, like, a controllable pitcher, right? I think that when we think about the Orioles and what they have the prospects to acquire, they should be able to, you know, play in a little bit of a different market. And by the way, a pitcher who's making real money next year too, right? This is another sign that the Orioles are maybe in a different era now with David Rubenstein as their owner. So that is certainly encouraging to be able to take on someone who Eflin last year was amazing. This year, he's had an interesting year because what Zach Eflin has done this season is stop throwing balls, basically. He has gone full George Kirby. Now, he's not had George Kirby results, but he even, I know last year he was not walking anyone. Last year he had a 3.4% walk rate, which is one of the best in baseball. Now it's 2.8. He is just pounding the zone. The results have not been nearly as good this year. You know, his ERA is over 4. Now, that doesn't sound that bad, but with the offense being down now, a 4.09 ERA is below league average. So we have to keep that in mind. The strikeouts are also notably down from last year, but he throws a ton of different pitches. I have to imagine the Orioles think that he'll fit very well in that ballpark. He's generally been very durable. They desperately need a starting pitcher to have one that helps, not just this year and next year. Makes a ton of sense.
My grade, if I were to grade all these trades, which I don't, would be incomplete. And that is because if Zach Eflin is the best starting pitcher the Orioles get this deadline, that's a disappointment. If they get somebody better than him and Eflin, then it's a win. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And as we know, as we flip to the prospects here quickly, because this is exactly the kind of deal that exemplifies the depth, right? Because Horvath and Etzel in particular, let's just knock them out of the way. Both of them, outfield prospects, very athletic college outfield, recent draftees. Horvath, the guy at the University of North Carolina, who we've seen play a little bit of the infield. Etzel was a junior college guy that really popped once he transferred to Southern Miss. And both of them have been like good. Like, their numbers aren't amazing, but they're already, you know, climbing the minor league ladder pretty quickly. They're great athletes, and there's a lot to like there. But like, easy to trade away, right? Respectfully to these guys, but it's like, it's very easy to put them together and get another team excited and not worry too much about it.
This shouldn't have felt painful for GM Mike Elias, is how I would phrase it.
Yes.
Baumeister is maybe a little bit different, though.
Yes. Baumeister is the one that I have to imagine was a little bit more difficult to part with. This is a really interesting guy who was, as an amateur, was really known more as a catcher in high school. And then once he got on the mound full time at Florida State, it was like, oh man, like there is a lot of untapped potential here. There have been a few pitchers prospects traded that we see. Brody Hopkins, another one mentioned, with a position player background, a guy who hasn't been pitching that much full time. And Baumeister, now with the Orioles, he's really started to kind of put it all together. So that's one. We know the Rays have been good and acquiring a lot of interesting pitchers with interesting backgrounds. That's one that he's one of the Orioles' better pitching prospects. And that is something that, you know, they in theory will need in the next couple of years, right? I mean, the pitching, there are still, you know, some questions with that. So that is Jackson Baumeister and the Orioles' prospects heading to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay certainly one of the busier teams that we have seen. And let's keep it going with the Rays, Jake, because they made two other significant trades, not just Zach Eflin, dealing away reliever Jason Adam to the Padres and Isak Paredes today to the Cubs. I don't think we're shocked that after they traded Randy and after they traded Eflin, at this point, very few Rays trades are going to shock me in terms of going out the door. I think we'll probably see one or two more before Tuesday's deadline. But let's talk about these last two that we actually know have happened.
I would like to start with Paredes. I am surprised they traded him, just considering how much team control he has left. It felt like Paredes is someone who could have been a member of the next good Rays team easily. And so for them to trade someone with so much control left was surprising. What kind of player is Paredes? He was an all-star. Pull, happy, doesn't describe it. This is a yank and tank individual, okay? The Rays trading him away just shows how invested they are in, like, the next 7 years, not just the next two seasons, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I retweeted something about this, but it is going to be really interesting because the discourse about Isak Paredes, which is like, can he continue to get away with this, pulling fly balls where he's not hitting the ball that hard, but he's so good at this exact kind of batted ball. Will that translate to other ballparks? And we're going to find out, because on paper, Wrigley Field is not nearly as friendly to that kind of, you know, that kind of profile. But I also think he's been a good hitter on the road. He's been a really impressive just overall bat for the last couple of years. And interesting, right? His career started with the Cubs, where he was traded to the Tigers and then traded to the Rays. He makes the Cubs better right now. And as we know, as you just mentioned, he's under team control for the next couple of years. It is a little weird that, because again, I think the Rays want to be good again next year. Like, I really do. I really do believe that with the pitching that they have coming back. But with the prospects that they have coming, you know, whether it's Junior Caminero, who needs to be in the big league sooner rather than later, whether it's still figuring out a place for Curtis Meade, whether it is Carson Williams, I can sort of see that vision if you're committed to the young guys that are really, really, really cheap. Now, I want to flip that to the Cubs, because I think that's where the Cubs' decision to acquire Paredes, in a market where there are rumors that the Dodgers were interested and the Yankees were interested in teams that, like, desperately need a third baseman right now to help them win in 2024. It is pretty amazing that the Cubs are the team that ended up getting him. And we haven't even mentioned the return yet, but one of that is Christopher Morel, who goes back to Tampa Bay. This is interesting from the Rays' perspective, because basically all of their other deals so far have prioritized minor league players, prospects that the Rays clearly believe in that can help them in 1 or 2 years. Morel is obviously going to slot into the big league lineup in some form right away, whether they're trying to win this year or not. I'm fascinated to see what they really believe he is, because I don't think it's a third baseman, but maybe. Like, Morel has played so many different positions poorly that I don't really know where he really fits best. Obviously, you're also buying the offensive potential, which is that he has, like, real, real, real slugging upside. But the OBP has just been so ugly recently that that's what's kind of tanked his value, and why Paredes does make the Cubs better right now and, you know, for the next few years.
I'm really surprised that no team could beat this offer.
Yeah.
And you make the point of the third base market is just so weak. Like, there really aren't any other third basemen available. Yeah. And there are some teams like the Yankees who could really use a player like Paredes. I know they traded for Jazz, and we'll get to that in a second. But I'm really surprised that Paredes ended up going to the Cubs, and that this is the package the Rays preferred. Again, who'd they give up? Who'd they get? Love this trade for the Rays. Shouts out Sam Miller. I understand. This is just an odd one for me. Feels like if they had waited a couple more days, that package could have gotten a little bit sweeter. But maybe they just wanted to jump early. The other deal that the Rays made, the big one, was Jason Adam. Jason Adam, controllable reliever, probably like a top 15, top 20 reliever in the game. He goes to the Padres for a trio of prospects, Dylan Lesko, Homer Bush Jr., and J.D. Gonzalez. Let's start with the players going back, because I think there's a really interesting conversation to be had that we're going to have very briefly about the conversation about Dylan Lesko versus George Klassen. Dylan Lesko, first round pick, very famous, one of the most polished high school pitching prospects ever, would have been a almost like lock top five pick if he didn't blow out during his high school spring. Like, really impressive guy. Has come back from TJ and just hasn't looked quite as sharp this year in 2024. The strike throwing hasn't been there. There are some concerns about the secondary stuff. His best off-speed pitch is a curveball, which isn't really playing like it did in high school. And he hasn't really been able to learn a slider quite yet. He's someone who has kind of plateaued this year, is what I would say. I don't think there's a reason to panic about him. But again, this is a famous pitching prospect. George Klassen is not that. I think if you polled people around the industry about who they'd rather have, it would not be unanimous. It would be pretty split between those two guys. But when we see the public kind of react to something like this, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe they gave this up. It's just important to understand you can't just sort by the prospect ranking lists, right? Even Jordan and I, who are huge nerds about this kind of thing, are not qualified to make assessments on these trades because we just are working with such incomplete information. There are people in the Rays and Padres front office who have spent like 3 weeks debating whether they think they can help Dylan Lesko or not, right? And so it's just important to remember that when we evaluate the prospect for big leaguer trades.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Lesko in particular, he turns still 20, right? He turns 21 in September. But right, the rankings too, I don't want to go too into the rankings discourse, but the point is it's a moving target. During the season, these prospects are constantly changing and their value for all these different teams is going to be different. And so it's easy when you just look at the draft status and when I have I heard of this guy, certain prospect, and you know, Homer Bush, another right son of a former big leaguer who was a top pick and maybe a little bit more famous in college. It's a lot bigger deal than some of these other deals for an Aiden Smith and a Brody Hopkins, right? It doesn't feel as, but the point is, as we've learned, the Rays are interested in a lot of different kinds of players. And that is my big picture thing. We didn't even mention the two guys they got from the Cubs, Hunter Biggie, who's absolutely going to be an awesome reliever for them very soon. Ty Johnson's a pitcher, you know, farther down the road. But I am so interested in, you know, for all the jokes about the Rays, like the Rays internally, they have their pref list, right? One of the most interesting things that I think anybody could get, if I could have access to the information, is like, who are the players on, not even just the prospects, but like, who are the players in all the other 29 teams that the Rays are looking at and thinking, oh man, if we could just get our hands on that guy, because you know it's and I'm sure for some teams it's the obvious ones, but I'm sure others it's just like, oh, like they actually are like dying for Ryan Jeffers, like beyond belief. Like they think Ryan Jeffers is like Johnny Bench. Like I'm sure there are versions of that across the league that like we slowly hear about when these trades actually happen. Now this one's a little bit more simple because it's buying low on Dylan Lesko, right? I mean, as you mentioned, a celebrated prospect who everybody know. The command has just been so bad, you know, since he got back. But I think the stuff is still there. He's 20 years old. Homer Bush, an athletic outfielder. J.D. Gonzalez, amazing defensive catcher. Can he hit? Probably not. Those are those two guys. But they've just, it's a hell of an assortment, man. I mean, they've got guys, they've brought in guys at every level. They've brought in now big leaguer and Morel, and they're probably going to keep going, whether it's Yandy, whether it's, you know, Zach Littell, maybe Brandon Lau. We'll see what else they can do before Tuesday. As for the Padres, I mean, really simple, right? We knew they were going to have to add arms. Their position player group is pretty solid. Their bench is very bad, but their position player group starting-wise is very solid. They needed to add arms. I expect them to still add probably another starter before the deadline as well, and Adam obviously makes them better.
Yeah, Jason Adam, he's had an ERA under 3 every year over the last couple seasons. He doesn't allow hits is kind of his thing. Like, his whip is always right around 1. He gets a lot of whiffs. It's a forcing fastball, changeup.
The sweeper's kind of been a little bit worse this year, but he's a really good reliever. Jordan, my big concern with him is he going to be comfortable wearing those bright colored City Connect uniforms that the Padres have? We know Jason Adam doesn't doesn't like that.
That's true. He's not into anything a little bit. He would like to keep it a little more straight.
The Yankees uniform is proper for him.
That's a different conversation. Obviously, if you know what we're hinting at, that is that. Also, I just want to mention, too, like, I'm super interested in what this means for the Cubs' future infield. Yeah. Like, with Matt Shaw, James Triantos coming, they just drafted a college third baseman. I know that should not be, you know, indicating the moves that they're making now, but it is, like, if they're right about Cam Smith, like, now we're having some conversations next year where it's like, who is the third base? Whatever. Anyway, it's a fascinating move.
Down the road. That's like a...
No, it's down the road. It's not a bad... Yeah. Again, too many good players is a great problem to have, right? Of course. It's just... I'm very interested what happens with Horner. I'm very interested what happens with Matt Shaw, who's in theory knocking on the door. Like, they have some... There are more moves to come with the Cubs, for sure.
I would like to do a Rays rant and then take a break. The Rays are smart, okay? The Rays front office knows what they're doing. The people who work for the Rays are incredibly intelligent and good at their jobs, that they are able to take a team that spends $25 and whatever they find in their couch cushions every season to build a roster and to compete more often than not. This is a club that clearly is prioritizing sustainable winning over like a 7-year span, right? They are not that bad this year. They're not a playoff team. There are teams that are worse than the Rays that are either going to stand pat or buy, right? The Rays' willingness to sell off pieces with control, right? With control, we talked about Paredes and with Adam and with Randy. That willingness to do that is why this front office is so good, right? They are making emotionless decisions. However, they had what? 18,000 people show up to the playoff game last year. I know that there are other things that are stymieing the Rays from being the organization that they want to be. And a lot of that is the ballpark. And once they build the new ballpark, hopefully they can transition into an era where they're spending a little bit more normally. They're never going to be in the top 15, but they're going to be a little bit more normal, hopefully. My problem with how the Rays do business is I think it creates an energy, and Rays fans, please email us and like let us know if I'm off base here. It creates an energy where like you can't invest yourself in a player. Because if I see a player, like as someone who cares about the Orioles, right? Like Gunnar Henderson, okay? They haven't extended him yet, and they might not. But I know I'm getting 6 years of Gunnar Henderson. If you're a Rays fan, you have absolutely no freaking idea when the player that you are emotionally connected to is going to go. There's no reason ever to buy a jersey if you are a Rays fan with any name on the back other than like Longoria in a throwback or Wade Boggs, right? Because the team's just going to trade them. And I understand that's what they have to do given the ownership's willingness and ability to spend, right? I'm not critiquing the front office. Like, I think they are making the correct decision. It's just unfortunate. And I do think it does have something to do with the way that the fan base interacts with the team. There's a lack of trust there, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it seems like, right, in the Eric Neander in the front office's position, I mean, the most generous interpretation, which is obviously the answer, is that they don't want to spend money and they're not spending money and that's why it's happening. But I think from their perspective, it's, all right, well, at the very least, we can be good every year. You know, at the very least, we can have a good team or give us a chance for our team. Now, obviously, this year it's weird because they're above 500 and 3 games out of playoff spot and they're going backwards. But they're thinking, as long as we're giving the fans reasons to show up and think that we can win the World Series or give ourselves the best chance to do that, then it'll be worth it for them to enjoy them for even 1 or 2 years at a time. I'm not saying that's right.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. Than we have 19,000 people showing up to a playoff game.
Yeah, right. That's a point in your favor.
Like, great, we won. But do I know these people? And that's with Randy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, yes, new players will come up. And this is also, like, Wander Franco does, like, he is a part of this conversation and that, like, he is the player they decided to commit to. And then he immediately, yeah. you know, whatever, like immediately like was exposed for doing horrifying things.
Yeah, I mean, he completely threw away that.
Right?
Like, they whiffed on that identification of the player they were going to build around, and yeah.
Right. But I just think that there's the nuance here is important because the decisions that they're making are objectively correct, and the decisions that they're making are like, I understand why the front office is doing them, and I think that they will be good in the long run, but it's like, for what?
And
if they win a World Series, none of it matters. None of it matters.
Here's the other thing, though, is... and. We can't say that they are objectively correct. Like, we can understand them. We can understand the moves, right? But that's where the pressure is for this kind of sell-off. Because, man, we've seen one at a time, right? All right, now it's time for him to go. All right, now it's time for him to go, right? This is a pretty dramatic, this is a really significant moment in the Rays franchise history in a way that is different than the last, yeah. than when they've done these individual big moves. And so, and honestly, if you even combine it with Glasnow, which was not that long ago, it really becomes, okay, this is a drastic overhaul of what this team is going to look like. And we're going to go from there. But it is a pretty serious overhaul. And like I said, I don't think it's done. And so what this team looks like and what players are going to be left for people to still feel connected to by the time it's back is going to be really interesting. It's going to be Shane McClanahan and I don't know. I guess Jose Siri's is still around. He's a certain interesting kind of, fan personality. But anyway, those are the Rays. Again, they're going to give us some more moves to talk about. But let's take a quick break. And when we return, we will talk about Jazz Chisholm to the Yankees. Jazz Chisholm to the Yankees. A couple other moves to talk about the teams that haven't done anything yet before recapping the weekend.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Let's just get right into it. Yankees acquire Jazz Chisholm Jr. from the Miami Marlins for Augustin Ramirez, Jared Serna, and Abraham Ramirez. Not Abraham. Okay, Abraham. That is the most important part of this trade.
Is it the N and not the M? Yeah. This is interesting because on one hand, you first hear it and you're like, oh, obviously, Yankees are desperate for any sort of spice, any sort of offense, any sort of energy. Oh, it's with team control. That's great. Oh, they didn't really have to give up too many of their top prospects. Although Augustin Ramirez, very, very fast riser. Another example of a guy who it's like you look up the numbers, you're like, wait a minute, who's this? He is very much in the top 100 mix, a catcher with very impressive numbers. Serna, Ramirez, a little bit lower levels, but solid prospects as well. Go ahead.
I did have a scout text me that Augustin Ramirez has hands like trash can lids behind a plate.
Okay, well, right. Well, he ain't exactly known for, this is not an Austin Hedges type. It is quite the opposite. But he has reached AAA at age 22, and dude rakes. So that's great. The key piece, right? But Jazz, you're like, okay, great. Oh, perfect. You know, that's, oh, she should hit really well in Yankee Stadium. And then you pause and you're like, hold on a second. How exactly does this fit with the rest of the team? It doesn't really matter because he makes them better, but it does raise some serious questions. And after this happened, you gave me a call yesterday and you were like, hey, so like, what is happening next here? And we got a little bit of clarity for that today. He did make it in time for Sunday Night Baseball. He started in center field, but it sounds like Jazz Chisholm will be playing some third base or at least attempting to learn some third base, and Gleyber Torres might be soon as well.
Jazz Chisholm nor Gleyber Torres have ever appeared at third base as professionals. Actually, can you double check if Gleyber played in the minors? But I know Jazz 100% has not, and neither of them have played in the big leagues. And that was my takeaway. And that is why I was a little bit confused initially. Let me explain. Yankees fans, you already know how this all works. Jazz comes in. He's going to play center field. Great. That makes sense. When Giancarlo Stanton comes back off the IL, he'll be the everyday day DH. Judge and Soto will be in the corners. We don't have to watch Trent Grisham hit anymore, which is, you know, probably a good thing. Infield stays the same. That would all make sense. However, Jason Dominguez is back.
the Yankees uber prospect is healthy and playing in AAA. When he comes up, it would be likely that he would slot into center field, right? Or at least somewhere in the outfield, because he is probably a better hitter than whoever the Yankees have in the lineup right now. That means that Jazz would then have to move into the infield, where he played for the Marlins coming up the chain and for his first handful of years in the majors. However, he has only played second base and shortstop. Gleyber has been pretty good recently. He's certainly turning it on, and they're not moving Volpe off short. And that would mean third base, where DJ LeMahieu is collecting outs like it's a hobby on offense, not like Nolan Arenado. And so I am surprised that the plan is Jazz go play third for the first time ever. Look, he's learned a new position before. It could totally work. They could make another trade for a third baseman. It's certainly a risk to hinge this most important season, where Juan Soto might just be like, I'll see you later. I'm taking the money, more money from someone else. This is a must-win year for the Yankees. And to just be like, yeah, you've never done this, go do it. Like,
yeah,
weird and ballsy, and I think I kind of like it.
If it is Jazz, for sure, I think it's related to my acquire athletes monologue that I had recently, which is just like, there are some players where you can just be like, hey, go figure it out. And Jazz is probably qualifies as that, as someone who learned center field in the big leagues. Gleyber actually has played third in the minors in AAA and in AA, which I did not know, about, I think, 7 or 8 games in 17 and 18, but
he's Brooks Robinson.
That was 6 years ago, right? So there's at least some precedent there, but yeah, a lot has changed since then. So I don't.
Gleyber certainly is built like a third baseman.
Yes. And I think, and honestly, just knowing that, I feel like it's more likely we'll see him there than Jazz.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think, again, at the same time, it is quite a bet, and there are definitely ways that it can go wrong. And at the very least, we know they are deciding, like, LeMahieu, it ain't happening. It probably means less playing time for Verdugo, all of those things, especially when Stanton is back and if Dominguez is coming up. It is an urgent move that forces other very interesting decisions, and that is why this move is so fun. But also, it's a thing that, listen, it's not just for this year, right? It is saying that, like, Jazz is going to be a part of our future in some combination of these positions, and I think that also says a lot as well.
It forces other interesting decisions, including nothing. If they don't do anything else, that's fascinating, because then Jazz at third is the plan. Let's quickly talk about Jazz the player for a second. This year, he's been about a league average hitter. He offers slightly below average center field defense, but is like, he's a center fielder. He can play center field. We have really no idea what he is right now as an infielder, because we haven't seen him do it every day for a couple of years. He makes the Yankees better. He is one of the best 9 hitters on the New York Yankees right now, in my opinion. That is really not up for debate, I think, right? Like, this offense has just been so blah that, like, he is good enough to be there, right? Let's talk about Jazz Chisholm, the person. I had a thread about this on Twitter. I think that a lot of the conversations about character concerns related to him are very much overblown and have something to do with baseball's inability to kind of onboard and make brash, outgoing Black athletes comfortable in the sport. I also think that Jazz has certainly made missteps in his career. Calling out Miguel Rojas on a podcast for no reason, in my opinion, was just not something he needed to do. He has rubbed people the wrong way. Some of that's been him. Some of that's been the culture. I would say a lot more of that has been the culture of the game than him. I think he's going to be fine in New York. Okay. I think it is not going to be an issue at all. The proportion of conversation about Jazz as a character compared to what he actually is completely out of whack and overblown. There are much bigger jerks playing every day in the game in rooms that you never, ever hear about. And I just think that if we want to talk about, like, outgoing people, like, they have Stroman and Verdugo. And yes, neither of them have, like, been outstanding on the field, but we have not had a Marcus Stroman, Alex Verdugo bust up in the Yankees locker room. I don't think it's going to be a problem. I'm excited to see Jazz Chisholm on the biggest stage in baseball. However, he needs to do the thing. There has been a gap between Jazz Chisholm, the idea, and Jazz Chisholm, the performer. Some of that has been due to injuries,
But a lot of that is he has been kind of mid over the last two seasons. He was an all-star in 22 and then missed the second half with an injury. He is the worst player ever on the cover of MLB The Show. Right? Like, that is a wonky way to describe it. Okay?
Yeah. But Javier Baez has done his best to
more on him later.
Undo what he had accomplished beforehand. But sure, yes, that is a way to look at it.
You get my point. You get my point. And I just, that's all that understood. He is still outrageously good and outrageously talented and like is only 26 and could really become something in New York if this goes well. Any other thoughts on Jazz?
Yeah, I mean, that's what is, I think, most interesting to me is he has already transcended, whether you like him or not, whether his numbers deserve it or not, he has transcended the market that he's played in to get the honor of being. That is a real decision to put a player like him on MLB The Show in a positive and exciting way, but it says a lot about how far he had come, how much he had successfully marketed himself and made people that the game at San Diego Studios, and they decide this is someone that we believe people want to buy the game because of it and the trajectory that we believe he was on, right? I think they thought we were getting in early here, and partially because of injury and partially because, again, we just haven't seen it yet. We haven't quite seen it. This year, Jazz has been healthy. We have seen Jazz be on the field every day, right? And even with that, you know, it's a 730 OPS. Now, he's been a lot better on the road than at home. He's been on one of the worst teams in baseball, and that's what's most exciting. What does it look like when Jazz is now playing for a team where it matters all the time, in a ballpark that fits him better? That's where it's not hard to imagine his game finally elevating to the best version of himself.
If you are going to work every day for a company as crappy and disorganized as the Miami Marlins, would you be doing your best job at work all the time? Not me. I wouldn't be. Maybe that says I'm a bad person. People should be grinding it out no matter where they are. But like, that is an understandable dynamic. The last thing I want to say, we have spent time with Jazz in the Bahamas. And I think that experience gave us a really interesting understanding of him as a person. Like, where he comes from in his background in baseball, he did not grow up in the American baseball culture. Like, the established norms that exist in our game were not something that he was necessarily around all the time until he went to high school in Florida, right? And so none of this is abnormal. Like, he is the person he wants to be. And I really respect that aspect of him a lot, because for him to continue to be that in the face of a lot of people telling him to be something else is very impressive. That being said, don't go on podcasting and trash your ex-captain. Just probably not good optics.
Yeah, but here's the other thing. Jazz ain't going to change, man.
He's not.
No, I'm not saying whether I don't want him to. Like, if you think, oh, he'll tone it down in New York, I really don't think so. I really don't think so.
I agree.
And I think that's great. It's great for us because we talk about baseball for a living.
Let's speed run the rest of these trades very quickly. The Cubs acquire Nate Pearson from the Blue Jays. This is just interesting. Again, the Cubs are kind of bad. They're acquiring a big leaguer that's probably for future seasons. Nate Pearson, former top pitching prospect, great reminder that phrase does not always mean a lot. He has struggled. He has shown glimpses, but struggled as a reliever for the Blue Jays over the last couple of years. The Blue Jays are getting Josh Rivera and Yohendrick Pinago back in the deal. Rivera is a guy who we saw play in college quite a bit at the University of Florida. Interesting shortstop. He's built like Carlos Correa, but he's really, that's where the comparison stops.
The double A OPS does not reflect that of a former number one overall pick, but maybe he could be a utility infielder at some point. Pinango is the one a little bit more interesting. Pearson is just one. It's just like, I mean, he's been bad. He's been a bad major league reliever, still throwing really hard. So the Cubs are obviously going to hope that they can get something out of him with under team control for the next couple of seasons.
Jordan, you're never going to believe this. Yes. Jerry DePoto did a trade.
He did what? No shot. Are you serious? They acquired Jimmy Garcia. Jimmy. It is not Yimmy.
Y.
It is Jimmy from the Jays, not Yimmy from the Yays. Jimmy Garcia is freaking nasty. Yeah, he has had some health issues this year, but he's throwing harder than ever. He throws more pitches than I like. he throws like seven different pitches and he's a reliever, which is like, let alone if you throw four pitches as a reliever, it's weird. He throws a ton. He's nasty. Looked amazing in his debut. They trade Yonatan Clase and Jacob Sharp, catching prospect. Clase is an interesting, toolsy player, 22, plenty of time to figure it out. No need for him to figure it out right away at the big league level. Probably isn't ready to do that. But the Mariners need relievers. Their bullpen has been thinned out, and Garcia, who is a rental, will absolutely help him if he can stay healthy. He makes their bullpen a lot better.
And to make room for that, maybe, the Mariners sent Ryan Stanek to the Mets in exchange for Rylan Thomas. I'll say this very selfishly. As someone who lives in New York City and covers the Mets a lot, Ryan Stanek being in my life is awesome. This dude rules. He is one of our favorite people in baseball. I love talking to him. He's hilarious. He's honest. He's very insightful and interesting. He was kind of meh for the Mariners this past season, but he has a track record of being a perfectly fine, good major league reliever, and the Mets need that. The other move the Mets had was acquiring Jesse Winker from the Nationals for Tyler Stewart. Winker being around, also great. This is a guy who had kind of a bad reputation for a couple stops in Milwaukee and in Seattle. People loved him in DC. It seems like he has done quite a bit of growing up. All the reports I got on him from the Nationals, people I was around, were really, really positive off the record. So that is very, I'm very interested to see how he kind of transitions to the Mets. The Mets needed a left-handed outfield bat. He's better than DJ Stewart, and they sent him down.
Yeah, and Winker is, it's wild. He's still only 30, just because his career has just gone some serious highs in Cincinnati and some lows in Seattle and in Milwaukee. But man, really resurgent with DC, and now they get a pitching prospect, Tyler Stewart, who's like 6'9" and throws hard, and so maybe he'll help them at some point. But we knew Winker was going to be gone as a rental, and it'll be. And I know he has a funny history with Mets fans, which is now being brought to light, not in a bad way, in kind of a hilarious way. A lot of kind of trolling back and forth, but he's talked about how much he appreciates Mets fans for how passionate they are, and I'm sure he'll be excited to play in front of them.
Red Sox acquiring catcher Danny Jansen from the Blue Jays for a trio of prospects. This is simple. It's rare to see catchers traded at the deadline just because how much work goes into handling a staff over the course of a season. Jansen makes the Red Sox better. They'll DFA, or I think they may have already DFA'd Reese McGuire. And so Jansen will kind of be splitting time with Connor Wong. Don't really think it's that complicated. He's a good catcher. He's a free agent at the end of the year. Very quick, yeah.
Alex Cora said that Connor Wong might be playing some infield, which is very interesting. But the main thing is they needed a right-handed hitter. That is the biggest part about this. Jansen has been an above-average hitter over the course of his career. An interesting opportunity here. I could see him making some real money this winter. He's been really steady, so it's interesting. And in division is interesting. They get three lower-level prospects. Cutter Coffee, definitely the one to know there, as the Blue Jays try and rebuild their farm system here at the deadline.
But that's not all the Red Sox did. They got James Paxton, woo-woo, from the Dodgers. They had DFA'd Paxton. And so that's why maybe this return doesn't look particularly sexy. Red Sox pitching has kind of been over the last couple of weeks. Paxton is kind of a shot in the dark. If he's the only thing they do the rest of the deadline on the pitching side, I would be a little concerned. But
I'm surprised. I would be surprised at this point. I think that they have another move, fairly significant move in there. For them, obviously, they lose the series this weekend at home against the Yankees, but they should still be going forward. I think they're good enough to absolutely make the postseason.
Last one. The Brewers acquire reliever Nick Mears from the Rockies for a gentleman named Bradley Blaylock and someone named Eugenio Herrera, neither of whom I've talked about or know about, and neither of whom we're going to discuss right now. Sorry, Jordan. This one is simple. The Milwaukee Brewers got a good reliever, and they'll probably make him even better. Jordan Schusterman, those are all the trades that happen. Let us take a break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about the teams that haven't done anything yet. And welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. So we did all the trades. There are seven teams that really haven't done a whole lot. Seven teams that are trying to win baseball games. And those teams are the Dodgers, Guardians, Twins, Braves, Brewers, Cardinals, and Astros. Jordan, who would you like to talk about?
I mean, just like, which of these teams is the very basic way to ask the question is, which of these teams would you be like floored if they do nothing?
The Dodgers.
Tuesday?
The Dodgers.
Right.
The
Dodgers. To me, it's the Dodgers. And I think, honestly, Houston, I think, might be second for me on that list. These central and Atlanta, I have no idea what to make of, but like these central teams, I just feel like all of them act with just such ridiculous amounts of caution and just acceptance of it. Now the Brewers are an issue with the Yelich injury and with how thin their rotation is. I could see them doing something, and they're generally, I mean, I know whatever Mears is something, so I guess that's not nothing, but like, I think that the Dodgers for sure. And I think that Houston are the teams that I'm watching the closest. I know the Astros took 2 of 3 from the Dodgers this weekend. So that's an interesting, you know, thread there. But it's just, again, we'll talk about some of these players that are left that we are for sure are going to move. I would say the biggest guys left that are absolutely getting traded are Eric Fetty, gone for sure. Jack Flaherty, gone for sure. Tanner Scott, gone for sure. Honestly, those are the three I am 100% certain of that I feel like are fairly impactful. I just Crochet, I'm not going to believe it until I see it. Scooble, I certainly don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. Jordan. Tommy Pham is getting
Tommy Pham is gone. I know. Tommy Pham's awesome. I'm so sorry if that's disrespectful. There's other players here that I'm confident are going to trade it. But as like headline, that is a real acquisition. Flaherty, Fetty, Scott, feel like the three big ones left for me, but what do you think?
Here is a theory with zero information, okay? I think we've gone too far in the other direction on Crochet. I think that the report that came out about how he wants the extension and how teams are more cautious to trade for him, like, he still could very well get traded.
I agree.
I think we've crumbled him up into the not going to get traded bucket. And I think the Dodgers could just be like, eh, screw it.
No, I totally agree with that. And I think that, right, Crochet and Robert are the ones to watch that would be both not stunning, but would be like, oh, wow. Like, okay, that's that. Now we're seeing like the likelihood of the best possible prospect to get traded is going to involve probably one of those two guys getting moved.
Either Crochet or Robert getting traded or neither of them getting traded, what would you choose? Either or neither?
I think I still would say at least one of them does go.
Okay. There you go. That's fine. Yeah. Eric Fetty, you're right. He absolutely has to get moved. The Rays have a lot left to do. The one that I'm super interested in, we've heard just no buzz about, is Brandon Lau. Like Brandon Lau, I think he has a team option for $13 million. I need another hobby. He would probably, like, the Rays are certainly not picking that up, right?
10.5? I mean, he's been great.
The Rays don't pay guys $10.5 million. They just don't really do that.
They don't have, they're going to be paying, their payroll is going to be like $50 million after all these other trades. Right. So I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but like, yeah. I don't know. It's,
Brandon Lau, I agree. Bangs, dude. He bangs. I think I'm all in on Brandon Lau. He, whenever he's played, he has been good. He's dealt with some injuries, but when he's on the field, he's a real impact guy.
Yeah.
Toronto still has Yusei Kikuchi, who they can move.
Yeah. He's Kikuchi, a free Turner. Agent. Yeah. Those are rentals that are, I think, will likely go. And Kikuchi's been really good. So sorry. Like, Kikuchi is not, I mean, you could say Kikuchi's a better pitcher than Fetty. I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. So that's significant.
Yeah. I got a prediction. Mm-hmm. The only move the Pirates make is trading for Justin Turner, and the city
or Pham.
Burns.
Or Pham. I think Pham is the other one that would make a ton of sense there.
Pham and Rowdy, what a hilarious showdown of personalities.
So then that's the other part, right? Is like, what do these teams in the middle end up doing? What does Texas do after getting swept by the Blue Jays? What do the Giants do after mopping the Rockies? What are the Cubs doing next? Are they just saying, all right, awesome, we got a third baseman in the future and present, and like, we feel like we've gotten better and we're just going to ride out the rest of the season? Or do they trade Jameson Taillon? Or do they trade, you know, Nico Horner? They trade some of their other pitchers. That's where things could get interesting. The Nationals have some two guys with another year of team control, Lane Thomas and Kyle Finnegan, who it seems like they believe are both clear all-star caliber players and thus should be, you know, that's what you should get for them. So we'll see if they actually hang on to them. But yeah, and then obviously the White Sox and Marlins and whatever, they're going to be trying to get rid of as many people as they possibly can.
I'm
and
fascinated.
What's happening with Oakland?
Well, they're selling their souls, I thought.
Yeah, well, right. So Oakland is the other one. I'm like, are they really going to go past this deadline without you? God bless them. They've been pretty sneaky decent recently. The A's, that seems wild.
I hope the A's don't trade anybody. They're having a great time over there, dude. But they bang. Like, Oakland is ripped. They ripped. One last thing I'm really interested in is Tanner Scott. So Tanner Scott has a 1.18 ERA and a 3.74 xFIP. So like the gap between, I understand reliever xFIP is kind of silly. The gap between his stats and his expected stats are pretty big. He's walking 5.3 guys per nine. And yeah, obviously striking out the world.
Yeah.
I'm just interested in if he gets valued as a top five reliever in the game or he gets valued as a top 20 reliever in the game. And we've seen what relievers are going for at this deadline, and it's pretty steep.
That's the thing. His price compared to Estevez will be very interesting, right? Because that's hard to compare with Adam with multiple years of control, some of these other guys. But compared to Estevez, that'll be very, very, very interesting. All right, let's shut up about that. Let's wrap up the weekend quickly and say goodbye because we're going to have some trades by the time we wake up. We want to get you this podcast available by Monday morning. That's why we're recording late on Sunday night. So again, normally on Mondays we'd fly through them, but we're going to go through it super quickly. So we'll start with the mops and the sweeps, and then we'll just fly through these.
Mop, 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 mop. Splish, Giants. Splash, baby. Splish, yeah. Splash.
First time the Rockies got mopped all year. How about that? This was their seventh out of eight opportunities this season. It's the first time they've lost all four. So good job, Rockies.
It's because the water doesn't go all the way up to elevation usually.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Right? Yeah, sure.
People know that.
Giants, and now they're, you know, 3.5 games out. They're still behind like four other teams. That's the other one we haven't mentioned where there were reports of Blake Snell, who looks unbelievable, like looks full Blake Snell.
He just needed spring training.
Right, exactly. I don't know. Giants, I don't know, man. I don't know what to do to make of the Giants. So they mopped the Rockies. Good for them.
I think they're going to go for it. Here's why I think they're going to go for it. I think if they don't go for it and they don't make the playoffs, I think Farhan is on the steamy seat.
Farhan is definitely top five Pobo hot seat. So that's fair. But I don't know. Can he resist the value that someone is throwing for Blake Snell? We're going to find out.
There's no sustainability if you're not there. Okay, the Blue Jays sweep the Rangers. Again, Rangers, WYD, are you good? Are you not? If the Texas Rangers could just send me an email, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com, are you good? Would be really, really great to know. Even though the Blue Jays swept, they are still selling. I think here's do the Rangers play tomorrow? I think they do.
I'm not sure.
If the Rangers
play St. Louis this week, but
they play tomorrow. If the Rangers lose tomorrow, they're selling everything. If they win tomorrow, they're sticking pick. And I think that's there's my dumb prediction with, again, no information. Moving forward, the Mariners sweep the White Sox. Don't have a lot to say here. Thank God. I mean, it just...
Dude, again, it's like not complicated. It's like, oh my God, they look terrible against the Angels. Yeah, okay. The Angels are bad. They are not the worst team maybe of all time, which is literally possibly the 2024 White Sox, who are on pace for 120 losses. They've lost 14 in a row for the second time this season, Jake Mintz.
I didn't even know that they lost 14 in a row until today.
They haven't won a game since the All-Star break. They haven't even traded their best players yet. So, holy crap, they're terrible. Mariners do what they need to do. Randy's on the Mariners. It's very funny and cool and good for him.
But they don't even need Randy because they have Victor Robles. I went to two baseball games this weekend. Saw the Braves and the Mets over at Citi Field. Saw the Mets win on Thursday. Saw the Braves win on Saturday. Big wins for the Braves in those last two games. I mean, they had lost six in a row heading into Saturday, and it was looking really ugly, but they take those two games, Saturday, Sunday, back on top of the Mets, I believe, in the wild card race. Very important for them. Matt Olson showing signs of life. Spencer Schwellenbach is legit. Very, very interesting arm for them, and they might need him because Reynaldo Lopez left today's game with the bugaboo duo word, Jordan.
Ugh.
Forearm
tightness. No. And not like that forearm is so tight.
It has been. His forearm has been tight like
all year.
That arm's been
as a tight forearm. Real,
now tight it's just pitches.
Tight. It's just too tight.
Bad. That's terrifying. Obviously, with Ronaldo Lopez, it was like, wow, is he really going to be a starter and stay healthy for the whole season? Hopefully, maybe not. But not loving that. Speaking of not staying healthy, Kodai Senga came back and looked pretty good and immediately got hurt. Thankfully, not an arm injury, but I guess that's almost even more frustrating because
probably out for the year is what Carlos Mendoza was
like,
said. Yeah,
doesn't seem like we're going to have him back. So that's very bad. And maybe if the Mets are going for it, they're going to need to add a pitcher.
If we're talking late injuries that change how teams act at the deadline, I would say Yelich and Senga are the two that'll have the biggest impact. Let's do Guardians over Phillies. They take 2 out of 3 at the bank. Very impressive Cleveland series win. And then to today's game. Baseball's beautiful, dude. Kyle Schwarber, Jonkenzie Noel, and Stephen Kwan. The three different body types. There are only three body types that baseball players can have. Those are the three. Kyle Schwarber, the short chonk. Jonkenzie Noel, who would have been a defensive end at Alabama if he had been born in America. And Stephen Kwan, who looks like someone we went to college with. Like, just regular build. Like, just a guy.
Yeah.
And they all went yard in the same game. All shapes and sizes. The only thing missing was, like, a tall, skinny boy, Chris Sale homer. Really filled my heart with joy. Cool story, though, on Saturday. Tyler Phillips, local Philly guy. From South Jersey. He threw a complete game shutout. Pretty impressive.
Kwan has 11 home runs. That is mind-blowing. Here's a Schwarber thing that I was alerted to by a friend of the show, Matt Curry, my Phillies resident Phillies fan, who I lean on for his Phillies opinion in a South Jersey accent. Are you aware of Kyle Schwarber's splits this year?
He's been good against lefties. Is that it?
Unbelievable. 270 points of OPS better against left-handed pitching. Anyway, there's some homework for you, Jake. Next time you see the Phillies, what the hell's going on there? All right, let's move on.
I think that's actually going to be tomorrow, so I will ask.
Great, wonderful. Yankees take 2 of 3 from the Red Sox. You know what? Not going to talk about it. Yankees and Red Sox, we're moving on from you. Nationals take 2 of 3.
Honestly, the only baseball podcast.
And by the way, that's like obviously negligent because the games on Friday and Saturday were amazing.
Oh,
and
God. They
like,
were so
absolutely
good.
Amazing, but we're over an hour and you guys are thinking about trades. So I don't
ready?
Really care.
Very quickly. Best Red Sox Yankees series since? I don't know because I don't watch them all. All right. The Astros took 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers. Gavin Lux.
Whew.
On
where has this been?
Fuego for the
where
Dodgers.
Has this been?
Where has this been, Jordan? Look, Ronald Acuna Jr. tore his ACL in 2021, was meh in 2022, and then last year the whole narrative was, well, it took him a little extra time because his leg exploded. But then when Gavin Lux stinks up the farm for the first 2 months, everyone's like, this is a problem. His leg exploded too! And there's something still in there. Go, Gavin, go!
Yeah, no, it's holy crap. They salvaged the series on Sunday. River Ryan looked awesome. That's been nice to see him throwing well. And yeah, I mean, the lineup they rolled out on Sunday with Lux batting third was probably the worst Dodger, even with Ohtani leading off, probably the worst Dodgers lineup, like maybe in, I don't know, 20 years. But they won. So who cares? Brent Honeywell, another clean ninth inning, making me happy. Twins taking 2 of 3 over the Tigers. Bailey Ober with an absolute masterclass on Sunday. Javier Baez sneaky heating up. And Royce Lewis is back and he is homering as well. Byron Buxton has also been amazing. And yeah.
Can you read the question I wrote about Javier Baez on the sheet, please?
It says, Javier Baez homered on Saturday. Don't look it up. How many homers is that for him this season? 1 as a Tiger, 2. So this season, I'm going to guess it's like, wait, he homered multiple. He homered 3 games in a row. So I think that got him to like 9?
Lower.
Less. Oh, no. And then how many? Remind me what his first year in Detroit was where I can answer that question.
This is his third season.
Okay, so then 9. So I don't know. Did that get him to 6?
He's at 4 home runs now on the season.
What?
4.
He had 1 home run before last week?
That appears to be the case.
Oh my gosh. So what is he at, like 25, 21?
30 in his Tigers career.
30. Oh my God. All right. Well, that's just making me sad. Anyway, Twins 2 of 3 over Tigers. That's holding steady. Nationals 2 of 3 over the Cardinals. The Nationals almost swept the Cardinals. Then Paul Goldschmidt, walk-off home run on Sunday. First home run Dylan Floro has allowed all year. He will absolutely be traded before Tuesday's deadline. The Rays take 2 of 3 over the Reds, who are just
sell.
So frustrating, Reds. Sell. So frustrating. Ellie with his second 3-hit, 4-stolen-base game of the season. The first player to have 2 of those games since Ricky Henderson in 1988. Ellie, I love you. The Reds, though, yikes. Also, it just reminded me, like, the Rays are going to still win some games down that stretch. Like,
oh, yeah.
They're not. They're gonna be they are still going to win games. Not that I think they're trying to tank, like, trying to get to, like, a top 5 pick, but, like, they're not going to. They're going to keep winning.
The Oakland A's take 3 out of 4 from the Angels because they bang. I don't really need.
I wish Lawrence, they mopped them.
Lawrence Butler rips like this. Yeah. I want to go watch the A's play baseball. That's an accomplishment in of itself. Marlins take 2 out of 3 from the Brewers. Thing to know there, Xavier Edwards, who has become their everyday shortstop since he came up, has just been amazing. Hit for the cycle yesterday. He came on our podcast 2 years ago when he got invited to the Rock Nation brunch and gave us like the funniest behind the scenes interview of the Rock Nation brunch ever. That guy's awesome. Very happy seeing him shine. Also, Devin Williams came back. That's a huge deal for the Brewers. He's one of the best 5 relievers in the world when he's purring, and it is good to see him healthy and throwing hard. The Cubs took 2 out of 3 from the Kansas City Royals. Cole Reagans was in the rubber game today, but like it was close until the 9th, and the Royals just keep sending James MacArthur out there in high leverage.
And then Hunter Harvey left with a back injury, so that's not good. Like, Royals, another team I'm watching very closely over the next couple of days. If they really, like, they're still right there, they can make the postseason, but you're going to have to add some pitching.
They're going to get Tanner Scott. That is my prediction with 0 insight. The Diamondbacks 2 out of 3 from the Pirates would have been a sweep, but Paul Sewald blows it on Sunday. O'Neill Cruz hit a ball to the absolute moon. Diamondbacks offense is acting like we thought they would be playing when we were like, oh my God, this offense in October is amazing. They added some really interesting pieces. Jock Peterson has been just unbelievable. Ketel Marte is like 4 home runs in the last week. They're really good. I'm worried that the Pirates are going to do nothing and people are going to get really pissed. Very funny development is Paul Skenes pitches tomorrow in Houston. He is going to shove. People are going to be hopeful about the Pirates, and then the deadline is going to pass and they will trade for Justin Turner. Last one to talk about, Orioles losing a series at home to the Padres. Orioles playing like a team that did not have an all-star break. They just look, which I guess 5 of them didn't. Yeah. You know, 5 of them went to Texas. But they just looked tired. They took the Sunday game to salvage the sweep. And Craig Kimbrell just imploding on Friday.
Yeah.
Again, 2-run home run to Jerickson Profar with 2 home runs in the night. My take, and I think I've told you this, Jordan, every Craig Kimbrell implosion is a good thing for the Orioles because it tells them that they cannot trust this guy in October. It is the saddest reality. He is a Hall of Famer. He is a different pitcher in the playoffs. I watched him melt last year when the weather got cold. He is going to throw high leverage innings for the Orioles, but it can't be the most high leverage. And I hope they just trade for someone else at the deadline so they don't have to run him out there.
I mean, I think they will. I just, why isn't it just Cano? I just don't understand. Like, I know he hasn't been as good as last year, but I just don't get it. Like, he's got like a 150% ground ball rate, just like he did last year. And like, I would feel pretty good about him throwing the ninth. So it just feels like even if they don't get someone, it's just going to end up being Cano, which isn't the worst thing in the world, but we will see. Jake, we will end the podcast on this, courtesy of our producer, Andrew Hartz. Shouts out to Andrew Hartz for producing this late on a Sunday night. He has dropped this update here in the chat. Gleyber Torres asked on Sunday night about the possibility of playing third base. He said, quote, "I'm a second baseman. I play second." Well, Gleyber.
That is funny. That is funny for 50 reasons. Mm-hmm. But the pride in playing second base for a guy who came up as a shortstop and wasn't good enough at it
that he had to move to second is funny to me. If you're going to say I play shortstop, I'm a shortstop, that's different. But saying I play second, I'm a second baseman. Buddy, second baseman is easier than third.
Gleyber starting to hit is probably going to increase the likelihood that he gets his way here. That's my guess. Mm-hmm. But asking Jazz to learn third is just so wild. Oh, man. I hope they do it. Like, Jazz's game, he doesn't care. Jazz will learn catcher if you ask him to do it. Like, this is part of what makes him awesome, you know?
But you want me to do just a radio show? No. Yeah. I podcast. I'm a podcaster. You want me to talk about, this is like, Jordan, I know this has gone on too long. When we meet someone who learns what we do, and they're like, just baseball? And where we have to be like, I'm a baseball guy. That's what I do.
I would say there's a bigger difference between podcasting about football and podcasting about baseball than there is playing second and playing third.
Email us, baseballpodcast.
What's a more ridiculous ask? Jake and Jordan talking about the NFL salary cap or Gleyber Torres go play a position you played in AAA? On that note, thank you all for listening. When we talk to you next, the trade deadline will have passed. We will hopefully be recording Tuesday night, but you'll obviously hear from us either late Tuesday or Wednesday morning. We hope you've enjoyed our deadline coverage thus far. Thank you, Andrew Hartz, for producing as always. Thank you all for listening. You can email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. We appreciate you so much. And we will talk to you all very soon.